This is Expat State of Mind with Tip and Tom.
Hey, this is Tip.
And this is Tom.
And this is episode 13 of Expat State of Mind podcast. Today's episode, we are having a chat with a friend of mine who is originally from the United States, but is also an Australian citizen and has been spending the last few years in Europe by way of London and now the Canary Islands and also Amsterdam. So hi, Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being able to do this and being open to it. This is the third time we've done an episode interviewing someone and getting to know their story. And it's good that we're doing another part of the world because I think Europe is on the list for a lot of people. But it seems like Europe is a bit harder to move to than, say, somewhere like Australia, New Zealand, or to Southeast Asia. And since you've been to Australia, like you lived in Australia long enough to become a citizen and now live in Europe, how would you compare like the visa process for, the countries that you've lived in?
Yeah, well, so the Australian visa story is an interesting one because every visa I got was really lucky. And so they would make the law around the visa more difficult because the government always kept changing. So I was in Australia from 2011 to 2016, and I got citizenship through naturalization in probably the fastest time that anyone ever has, ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hadn't even applied my PR by then.
Yeah. So my visa and citizenship story cannot be repeated. That can't be done again because I got really lucky. And every time I would get the visa, they would make that visa harder to get. So just from the outset, like I lived in Adelaide, which was considered a regional area, still is. It's bigger than Amsterdam as far as population, but I was able to get a regional skilled migrant visa, the RSMS, which fast tracks you into permanent residency. And before that I was on the, just the general, I think it was the 457, the general, skilled migrant. Yeah. And it was just basically a waiting game until my 4 years ticked over and then I could apply for citizenship. Now Europe, that was strategic because I applied for a passport basically the day that I got my citizenship papers in Australia because I was 30, and I knew that at 31, the timer would run out on the option to do the working holiday visa. So that's how I originally came to Australia from the US, was the working holiday visa. You have to apply for it before you turn 31. And as an Australian, then I had the right to do it in 35 countries or so. And that was always the plan, to get the Australian passport and then be able to go overseas again. So I landed in Amsterdam, 1 week before my 31st birthday and applied. And I actually got the visa granted, 2 weeks after I'd already turned 31. So as far as ease goes, yeah, I mean, it was a lot easier to get a visa in Europe, but I was Australian.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I think if you have an Aussie passport, it's a bit easier versus having an American passport or even, other countries around the world. Aussies, you said they have 35 countries that, they can do work and holiday visa in. That's a lot.
Yeah, and I think actually I'm probably lowballing the number, but it's basically all of Europe, and then there's also a lot of Asian countries and South American countries too. So, but the thing where my American passport kicked in was, you're in Europe, you've got a working holiday visa, a company can try before they buy, meaning they can hire you on without needing to go through the paperwork of sponsorship. But once my year was ran out, that's where I ran into issues. So thanks to my American passport, I was able to get a visa called the DAFT, which is the Dutch-American Friendship Treaty, Mm-hmm. And that makes it super easy to go on to this entrepreneur visa where you're sponsoring yourself essentially, and you don't have to go through any of the rule, like if you're Australian, you have to prove that you've had a business before, you've got to prove like the earnings you've had of this business, you have to go through a lot of hoops. But with the Dutch American Friendship Treaty, you can basically just say, I have a company, this is the name of it, and you get a visa. Enough. So yeah, so there's a lot of Australians that don't have success going through this way. And that was where my American passport really paid off. So
the top tip there is to travel with at least two passports that you can interchangeably use depending where you're going.
Exactly, and to know when to leverage each of them. Exactly. Yeah, that was a good tip.
did you often like enter a country on one passport and leave on a different one?
Yes. And to be clear, I just at this point I'm just recognized as an American because that's the one that my visa is tied to. My visa in Europe is tied to. So, right. But in these days, while I do have not permanent residency, I will in August, but I have residency in Europe. If my passport were to be stolen or something like that, then I have the Australian one to lean back on. And then on top of that, if I were to lose my residency card, as an American passport holder, I actually can't be in Europe right now because of the ban. So that's another reason why I always travel with my Australian passport close at hand, because it's a good passport to have right now. Australia is on like one of the 10 countries that are allowed to be in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of the better places to be in the world right now, it has to be said.
Exactly.
For so many reasons. side note, I do have a question, but this random question just popped into my head. Did you vote in the previous, even though it was like a couple weeks ago, election?
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say it would be a sore topic if my vote had lost, but I have always applied for absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. But my ballot is in my address in Amsterdam, and Amsterdam was declared a basically the hotspot of Europe for COVID-19. So travel was not recommended, and it was so I had to make a really tricky decision about going back to get the ballot and some other things, but ultimately I decided to stay where I am.
Right.
Fortunately
fortunately it didn't come down to one vote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would have been voting in Illinois, yeah. And I voted for the 2016 election from Amsterdam.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about Illinois, like, it's usually always blue. So whenever I do vote, I'm like, man, I really should vote in North Carolina. Because there, like, I might have a chance of making, like, you know, a difference. But I mean, every vote does count, as we've seen. But whenever I do vote, well, I only vote in Illinois. That's the only place I've ever been registered to vote. It's always blue, so I always feel like, oh, you know, I'm just adding to the sea of blue.
Exactly, yeah, because of the Electoral College, I feel the same way. But it's still satisfying.
So what made you choose Amsterdam? What was the reason behind that choice?
Yeah, that was actually going to be my question. Like, why did you choose Amsterdam?
Yeah.
Like, was it strategic? Did you know that?
It was totally strategic, But it's also emotional, though. But, I mean, so I'm someone that plans my life very carefully, but with big life decisions, I plan my days very carefully, but with big life decisions, I go with gut feeling, and that's worked out for me. So Amsterdam was always on the short list because I work in marketing, and I work for brands, a brand strategist. So I need to be connected to the headquarters of a company because that's where marketing happens. It's not necessarily regional offices. So if I was going to work in English, my countries were limited to basically Australia, Canada, US, the UK, and and then Amsterdam. And Amsterdam came up because my boss in Melbourne was from Amsterdam. And so I was aware of, you know, this place was had a lot of career opportunities. And then Brexit happened. Brexit happened the summer that I moved to Europe. And so there was a focus put on Amsterdam for being part of the continent where companies were starting to move over. Now, that's the strategic side of it. But what, yeah, and so it was always, you know, lightly considered. But what really happened was I came over to Amsterdam for a weekend. And it was a mid-August weekend. And I stayed with a friend of mine from Chicago, actually, who was just living the life. Like, she lived in the Jordan in a canal house with her husband and her dog. And she was finishing work at 5 because that is really an advantage of Netherlands is that they really put an effort on or a focus on a work-life balance. So laptops are done at 5. People really enjoy their time off. And she lived in the cutest neighborhood, and I got to see the best slice of life possible in August when it was 28 degrees. And I had a bike, and I visited a music festival, which of course was the best one I had ever been to coming out of Australia. and I had this
thing. Right, yeah, you don't really get to go to a music festival in Australia. So it's exactly. Anything in Europe would be another level.
I know. I was easily impressed. And it really made an impact on me, an impression. And so on Monday, after that phenomenal weekend I had, I thought, this is it. That I've arrived. This is where I want to live. And I went to the immigration office in person, and I applied for my visa, and that was one week before my birthday. So I had my biometric testing done, and I asked the immigration agent, you know, are you sure that I will get this visa? Like, you know, I'm applying now, but if it's going to be dispatched after I'm 31, then. And she said, yes, yes. And I go, can you please write this down? I mean, I was so, yeah, exactly. And in the end, it got approved, and thus started the next chapter in my life. And I'm so grateful for it. And Amsterdam has been phenomenal beyond my dreams. So thank goodness for making decisions based on feeling, because it's worked out.
Well, it's funny you said Amsterdam has been phenomenal, and you know, you had like a heartfelt connection with Amsterdam, but you're not in Amsterdam at the moment. Why is that?
Yeah, Amsterdam's in lockdown, so yeah, it was my office has been closed since March, and it's it comes down to the things I love about Amsterdam are the people. And right. I love the events, and I love doing things outside. I love going to restaurants. I love the energy of the city, and that's one thing that's really attracted me to Europe. But like more over Amsterdam, more so than any other place, was the vibrancy, and all of that is on hold right now. And it's going to come back. And I am going back to Amsterdam. This is really a temporary stay. I'm eligible for permanent residency in August as well. So I'm making Amsterdam a long-term home. But yeah, at the moment, I mean, I'm in the Canary Islands where it's 27 degrees every day. And so
it's currently roasting down under as well. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. I'm giving you, well, in Amsterdam it's 5 degrees and rainy, but in the Canary Islands it's wonderful. And because I'm in the Schengen zone, I can travel, so I'm just on holiday basically, and working remotely. Exactly.
Rewinding back a little bit, because I feel like I kind of remember how you ended up in Australia in the first place. So I'm going to tell you what I think, and then you tell me if I'm like right, kind of right, or just completely off base. But this is what I think in my head is that. You were here because of an Australian man, and you were used to be a chef, and you worked in hospitality or something with this man, and then you guys split up and you came to Sydney. Is that right? Did I make that up?
It's pretty close. So I used to be a restaurant manager. Okay. So you're in the right area. I used to be a restaurant manager, and I, this is back in 2010. So the global crisis was happening, and I was working in ski resorts. So not at all what I studied. I studied advertising, which is what I work in now. But I went into hospitality, and at the ski resort, I learned about doing seasons down under. So there were people that were working winter to winter. Can you imagine? I mean, I had a whole year of winter, and I after I finished the season in April in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, I went to Australia and I started working at Perisher as the restaurant manager of their resort restaurant. And on the third day, I met my boyfriend. He was the head chef at the restaurant and fell in love, and, you know, in the bubble of ski resorts, it really accelerated our relationship. And when the season was finished, in September, October, we moved back to his hometown, which was Adelaide. So I would have gone back to the US at that point and continued with my job and just on the seasons, but I was in love. And landed in Adelaide. We didn't work out, but Australia did. And I landed a wonderful job and it met fantastic people just in my first week there after we broke up. And that was crucial because I stayed in Adelaide for 3 years, actually a little bit more, 3.5 years. And it was thanks to Adelaide that my visa process was so smooth. So I reflect on that experience just with actually a lot of gratitude that it worked out that way, because I'm thrilled.
Yeah, we did Adelaide last year for the first time. I think both of us have been.
That was this year. It just feels like it was last year because of
COVID. Feels like it was 10 years ago.
Literally the beginning, like we were in Adelaide and people were like, "Oh, I think."
That's right. Yeah, it was. Yeah, flights. It's half a year.
Yeah, because we were there in March for a festival. You probably know about it.
The Fringe.
WOMAD Festival.
Oh, the Fringe. Yeah, and WOMAD, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we did, like, majority WOMAD, and then we did, like, Fringe, like, in the evening sometimes.
Oh, that's I love Adelaide. Yeah. I love Adelaide, but one thing about them is that they put their entire cultural calendar into 4 weeks.
Yeah, so yeah, it seemed that way.
They call themselves the festival state, but like all of the festivals are from the second week of February to the second week of March. I mean, really, all of them happen at the same time. There's like eight.
Oh, yeah, because I think even the V8 supercars was like the week before or the week after. So they literally had crammed it all in.
Yeah. Which they were lucky because, like I said, we were there like the second week of March, and then it was like COVID is here. We're going to lock down Sydney. And we flew back and it was like, all right, let's get ready for this lockdown. I was like, they are all lucky, like Adelaide, because that probably is the source of a lot of income for Adelaide. Like, you know, everyone coming to Adelaide, all of the artists and, you know, people from around Australia and maybe even other parts of the world coming to this one city to partake in all these festivals and stuff at this particular time of the year. And then, you know, as you said, that's the only time when they're having stuff going on, and then it's probably a bit sleepy the rest of the year. And yeah, they got to have their highlight of their year then, and then go into, you know, COVID times.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I never considered it, but their timing couldn't have been better. I mean, as far as they wrapped up basically just as the world was going into lockdown. I was in Israel when everything turned upside down, and I was at a Jewish festival called Purim, which is like a Jewish carnival, and I do costume design as my hobby, so it's a dress up thing, and it was super exciting. I mean, it's like the Oscars of costumes. So, and I was in a bubble, and I didn't realize that the world was turning upside down, and that I, being a non-Israeli with my passport, was going to be kicked out of the country soon. But flights were being canceled. And just to give you perspective on this, the limit on attendance for events at that time was 5,000, and we just had, this was like March 21st. No one had any clue. what was going on. But yeah, gratefully, I got back into Amsterdam. And that's one thing that's good to know for visas is if you have residency in a country, you do have the right to come back. I mean, you might have to go through certain loops, especially with like Australia, where I would still have to do this quarantine and certain things, but you always have the right wherever your residency or passport is from. So I was never at risk of not being able to come back to my apartment.
Right.
These are the things you never think that you have to consider. Can I get back into my country? But this has been a very unusual time.
So because it sounds like you've been quite nomadic in the fact that you've moved around quite a lot, but it also sounds like wherever you've been, you're kind of settled as well. So what would you say to people that are moving? What are your kind of sort of first steps when you get somewhere in terms of setting yourself up and meeting people, meeting locals and setting up some friendships and stuff wherever it is you move to?
Yeah. In Australia, I lived in three cities. So I was in Adelaide where I really put down roots. And then I was in Sydney for a year and Melbourne for a year and a half. And now I've been in Amsterdam for 4 years. So my like reflection on these are that it does take about a year before you really feel connected in a sense of this is home. And that's because you're going to meet a ton of people at the beginning. You're going to go to meetups, for example. It's a really great way to meet people.
Isn't that how we met?
Also through, it is how we met. Yeah, meetups. And I also, fitness is another way. And music. When you find your music tribe, that's a way to really unlock a lot of friendships. And it does take a while. You think you're meeting people quickly at the beginning, and I am like a textbook extrovert, but it's only after a year when you put the time in that I consider it like watering plants, and then after a year you really see something grow. So that's my advice to people is when they're starting out is
oh, we lost your advice.
Yeah, no. Oops.
Put the effort in, then.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, we lost the beginning of that there. So, just as you were about to give us your pearls of wisdom, we lost you.
My pearls of wisdom is that it's just to give yourself time, right? So you're going to make friendships very quickly at the beginning, and there's a lot of opportunities you're going to have to meet people in these meetups if you put the time out there and put your and put effort into just saying yes to things. However, my experience is that it does take a year before you really can feel a sense of home. And I'm super lucky because I have what I consider chosen family in three continents. I have family, you know, like really, really close friends that I would do anything for that are in Australia. I haven't seen in 5 years, but you know, I feel so deeply for them, and I'm really lucky for that. And then in Europe, you know, I've just turned, you know, enough years now that like I have really rich friendships here too that I also consider family. And then I have my actual family in the U.S. So I feel really grateful for that. It doesn't come overnight. It doesn't come after one meetup. It takes time. But in the beginning, say yes to everything. One trick I had was I lived in the city. I lived close to in the CBD or close to it, which meant it made it really easy to just go to somewhere after work or to go to a meetup on this day. And yeah, I mean, it just remove the obstacle of distance.
I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah, it's tactical, right? But just in the beginning, live in the CBD. And now I've been in Amsterdam for enough time. I pay less and I live outside of the city, but I also have my base of friends. So I don't need to be saying yes to so many things.
Well, I can definitely relate to that. Trying to live as close to the CBD as possible, and B, feeling like you have to go to everything because you don't want to miss out on connections or miss out on like exploring a new place or, you know, going to this party or whatever.
Yeah, and that's how we met. I mean, it was a Sydney girls meetup, and could have possibly been that, you know, one of us stayed home that day. So, yeah, I do love that. I guess it's easy to get tired of the same conversation, and you have to acknowledge that you are going to have a lot of where are you from, what do you do, and I call it the hostel conversation, as in the four questions that you ask anyone at a hostel. You're going to have a ton of those in these meetups, but get your get comfortable with it, get your story down, and then have a list of questions that you're ready to ask that aren't the standard four. Where'd you come from? How long you been here, and what do you do? And I forgot the fourth, but that's basically it.
Yeah, I think when I first got here, I remember telling someone back home that it felt like those first few weeks of uni, where everyone you knew you had to just ask people the same questions over and over and over again. And as soon as you start speaking to someone, you're just like, oh, here we go, we'll go through these hoops. But like I say, you kind of have to, don't you, to get to the next question.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because you're also just trying to get a base to who this person is and to move to the next thing. And I'm going through it right now. I'm in the Canary Islands, and it's a lot of remote workers have just arrived, like me. Basically, the UK has just banned non-essential travel on, I think it was Sunday. And so the flights were packed with people from the UK escaping to come here for the winter. And so, every night of the week are these meetups. You know, and people that are all here alone, like me, but trying to find their tribe, and I'm going through it again. And so, these questions are really back into focus. And I remember what that was like in Amsterdam, and I remember what that was like in Sydney. And it sucks on one hand because like you miss having your friends where you don't have to explain who you are all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and what you stand for. But at the same time, you've got to go through all this like that. The base has to be laid, the foundation, and then you can start to build on that.
Yeah, I definitely like know where you're coming from, because I feel like that's something that, you know, Tom and I both had to do. And it's funny, I remember when I moved to, well, when I was preparing to move to New Zealand, in my mind, I was thinking about that kind of process, like, oh, okay, I'm going to have to start over again and get to know people and, you know, let me refresh my meetup account and, you know, join some groups, and thinking about like going through all the steps again. But then when you're actually doing it, it is enjoyable and it's kind of exciting. And I put this added pressure on myself thinking about going through that. But then when I was actually doing it, it was like, you know, I know how to do this. I'm used to this. This is cool. I can definitely relate. So I think we're going to take a quick break, maybe get some more water, and then we'll come back. And I've got a question on the tip of my tongue waiting for you.
Okay, great.
Yeah, cool.
Sorry. Thank you for listening to Expat State of Mind. If you're enjoying what you hear, like, comment, subscribe, and share this podcast. And remember, if there's anything you want to hear on the podcast, hit us up at Expat State of Mind on Instagram or expatstateofmind@gmail.com.
Right. And we're back from our break. Unfortunately, Tom isn't joining us for the second part of this episode of the podcast. So it'll just be Laura and myself, but that's all right. I wanted to discuss, you know, dating and your experiences dating abroad. So maybe it's good that it's just the girls on this part of the conversation anyway.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Cool. All right, so I guess we could just like jump right into it. Like you have obviously lived in multiple places, and I imagine that the experiences that you might have had like dating wise could potentially be different because each place is different. But what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I've had my time in Australia was really marked by one big relationship, and also in Amsterdam by one big relationship, and yeah, there's been some experiences just on the top level of I'm really romantic, so this is something I found out about myself through the years. And so dating a Dutch guy, and I'm not going to paint the entire culture this way, but they're just it's a different kind of courtship, a bit more pragmatic. it's the kind where you're in pajamas and watching TV and cooking at home by the second date. And I know this about myself that I like a little bit more, a little bit more romance, I think is the best way to put it. So that's been a good learning to go through, because that's the sort of thing that you really need to match with your partner.
Right.
And I haven't dated many other Dutchmen. In Australia, I met a guy on the second day I moved to Australia, and he was the head chef at the restaurant I was managing at the ski resort. And by the second week, we had moved in together. And so we
Oh,
had really, yeah, a relationship on
wow.
steroids. Yeah. And that really kicked off my time in Australia. But he wasn't the right fit for me. And I met him at a time in my life right when everything was changing. And here was this, stable guy, and just a little bit older, a little bit more, seemed wise, and he was 34 at my 25. And I think I was just in love with his Australian accent too, because it was so fresh. I had just arrived, and I was so in love and just enamored with the Aussie accent that, anyone could have said anything to me, and I would think it was the sexiest thing alive. So when the ski season finished, 4 months later, we I've got a cat in the background here. One second.
I hear.
Yeah. When the seat this One second. Okay. So when the ski season finished, we moved back to his town of Adelaide, and he was a guy that really needed, yes, a partner who really was more dependent, I guess to say. And I now that I was out of the ski resort, was ready to fly a bit and meet my own friends and get my own job. And that was the beginning of the end. And the end was actually really abrupt. He dropped me off at a hostel, because I had nowhere else to go. I knew no one else, and that fortunately I already had a great job in Adelaide. And my first week, while I was living in the hostel and secretly and then managing a million dollar hotel, and I went out for a walk one night, heard music coming from a bar, which was a drag bar, having a performance on Sunday night, and sat down next to who would become my best friend, Jared. And yeah, so dating wasn't really a big part of my time in Australia, because I worked in hospitality and I didn't really have an opportunity to meet people. I worked Tuesday through Saturday, finished service at 3 a.m. on Saturday, exhausted on Sunday. Monday was laundry day, and then back to work on Tuesday. And so this group of guys, Jared and his friends, became my brothers, my chosen family over the years. They were who I spent Christmas with. They were who I holidayed with. They were the reason I stayed for so long. And until, I could stand on my own feet, and that I was fully established in Australia. But they were really my lifesavers. So I, yeah, when I reflect back on my time in Australia, it really wasn't so, marked by relationships, except for that really big first one.
Yeah, get what you mean. Oh, that's interesting. That's a good perspective, because like the reason why I even asked this question in the first place is because I think
because of how the world is now, and when I say that, I mean like how everything's so like app and technology based, a lot of people do think about, you know, when they move overseas, especially I think in a certain age range, you know, they think about, you know, how am I going to date and, you know, what's it going to be like to date, especially I think if you're, let's say you're part of the LGBT community, sometimes people ask the question of, you know, whether this place is even safe for me to date. And so it's just interesting to get different perspectives. And yours is obviously coming from a place where, you know, you've had these big two relationships. And it's interesting that you mentioned before the guy, the Dutch guy. I'm assuming that it was, his approach to dating was quite different to what you experienced in the States, which I'm
I think this is interesting because the timing. I left the States when I was an adult, so I had one relationship there, but not really. I didn't really have a dating life so much in the States that I can compare to. So there's most of my adulthood has been overseas. Mm-hmm. But the apps, Tinder came out in 2014, I think. It rolled out slowly in Australia. Well, it wasn't actually slowly, it was adopted really quickly, but it was already a big thing. And it was already a big thing in the States. And it was near the end of my time in Australia. So I used the app a little bit, but I think that would have changed my entire experience because of my hospitality hours. I had no way to meet people in an organic sense, like in, you know, going to a bar or a restaurant or meeting people through a birthday party. An app would have changed that in a big way. And, you know, I can only assume, I can't see what world would have been differently, but I left Australia in 2016, taking stock of my life and knowing that, you know, I had this limited time to go overseas before I was 31 to do the working holiday. But because I didn't have a relationship, it was an easier choice. And yeah, and I knew it was risky. I knew at that age to be going because I had just changed career and I was really junior. And starting over right when you're junior, you know, in your career in a new country, it can be really tricky. And it turned out to be. But I knew that if I waited in Australia until I was more senior enough in my career to get sponsored and go over to Europe, which was always my plan, that my life could follow an entirely different trajectory. Because at that time, I still wanted kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's the decision that I made a few years ago, that I want to be child-free. But like back then, I was still looking for that. And so many other, my life could have gone entirely different direction if I just waited a couple of years, because it would have been too hard to leave.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you might not have left Australia then.
Exactly. Yeah. So I it was kind of one of those moments where you're at the crossroads of, okay, I took this path, and this is like one of the definitive choices of my life was this.
Yeah. Whoa. That's crazy. How different your life could have been had you just made one different, a different choice, but just one choice that you would have had to make. It's very interesting. But so now that you were in London and now you're in the Canary Islands, would you say that you've done any dating there?
Yeah, well, okay. London, I was just in London for a week. So Amsterdam the 4 or 5 years almost. Canary Islands, I've been here for 2 months. The tricky thing here is that everyone wears masks. We have to wear masks outside. There's no bar culture. You can go to a bar, but you have to sit at a table. So it's really hard to meet people because of the masks, actually, because you can't feel connected. Yeah. So, you know, I can say on the podcast to all the listeners, I actually had a couple dates. The first were with with two other digital nomads like me, so remote workers. But the island I'm on is so small, and the guys weren't my type, but I gracefully said, thanks, nice to meet you. And I keep running into them every single day on the island.
That's really small.
Yeah. And then I went on a date last Wednesday with a guy who lives on another island. Exactly. Yeah. He's Canarian. So he's from here. And it was super nice. We'll have a second date this week. So the flights are 30 minutes between the islands, or you can take a ferry. It's an hour. I mean, it's a really different place here where people actually can live their lives between islands on a weekly basis. So it's, But I would say by and large, I'm not really expecting so much that of dating right now. I've been working a lot on myself this year, and I think like a lot of us, right? And it's, at the point now where I am really open and ready to meet someone. But I also know that my life is about to turn upside down again in April when I go back to Amsterdam. So that's part of the reality of being an expat, is that your life, it's defined by the move that you've made. And you might, in my case, make another move. And so you have to have these approach, or like this decision with someone, either you're going to fly with me on my route that I'm already going, or I have to change my entire plan to stay. And I'm not at that point. I'm open to meeting someone, but I'm not at the point where I want to change my plans. That's always in the back of mind. I wonder if other expats have felt this, like, there's a little bit of apprehension about meeting someone. Whilst I'm a romantic and I love it, and falling in love and going through all that, there's always the reality check, which is, the location, which is a big defining part of a relationship, especially when you're starting out, could definitely change.
Yeah, we've actually mentioned that in previous episodes, how it can be a bit harder to date as an expat, because sometimes people kind of see you as a flight risk, because if you're on a certain visa and that's only for a year, it's like, why get to know this person, and they may leave. Or dating someone else, like you're an expat and dating another expat and you're from different places, and what happens if one of you wants to go back to where you're from after a couple of years, because that's where you want to live long term and raise a family. There's so many different aspects when you're an expat when it comes to dating, and it's, I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, flight risk is transitive is another way to say it, and I see this on Tinder sometimes when I'm in Amsterdam, and I see in Tinder someone's they're traveling, or they're even like recently arrived or something like that. And even though I am an expat, when I'm in Amsterdam, I feel really grounded to Amsterdam. I ended up being a flight risk in the end, actually, which is interesting, but it's almost like I reject those people because I don't want a flight risk either.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird position. This whole thing about dating as an expat, I wonder if your other interviewees have felt this, because I know that one of the most defining things of my life is being an expat, and that's a value to me. That's defined who I am, and the struggles that I went through, and the success that I got. Right, like that is such a trying thing of your character, and it's the thing that I'm most proud of. More than my career or my university degree, it's going into a new culture and integrating, on my own and doing that. And that's something that can never be taken away from me. And so when I'm dating, I'm seeking out someone that's had that experience, because that's really important to share that, because they get me, we get each other. And so when you date someone that's local, that's never lived anywhere else, that, and then that's, then that's going to always be a point of misunderstanding, or, you know, they're just not really ever going to understand your full, the full scope of who you are. And that was going back to the Dutch guy, for many reasons why it didn't work out. But one of the things was he had been an expat and it didn't work out for him. He failed. Like, he had tried to go to another country and he missed Netherlands too much and came home shortly after. Right. He didn't spend a whole year. And so I remember thinking, like, wow, this guy doesn't really get me, because he didn't actually, he wasn't cut out for it.
Yeah. He can't really relate to you. Because his experience was totally different.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so when you're dating someone, and when, like, going back to when you're dating someone that's local and they haven't really had that, then you'll never really fully match. At the same time, like, when you want to see, so then your pool is kind of limited to people that are also expats. And yes, there's a flight risk. So there was a guy I was dating just before all this happened in the beginning of this year, a guy from Barcelona. And we shared that we had both left, you know, almost within the same few months, we had both left our homes and gone to Amsterdam. Mm. And I ended up being a flight risk. I moved to Barcelona and left him behind. So, because as soon as the borders opened and we could travel again in Europe, when the restrictions were dropped in June, I was on the second flight, you know, out to Spain. So, yeah. And I mean, can you imagine what that must have, you know, we had open communication. It's not like I left, you know, the next day, but that's always going to be a risk, is that one of you is going to leave. When you have two expats, you've just now doubled the risk.
Yeah. It's funny. I feel like you've been dropping some wisdom in the last couple of minutes. I think people will really find this helpful. Because this is like another side to dating. Sure, you know, people do like the romantic side where you meet someone and he's from this place and you're from this place and you meet so randomly and it's almost like, you know, attraction instantly, and, you know, you end up dating and it's a great love story. But there's a whole other side to it where, you know, you meet someone and yeah, things might be great, but sorry, I'm going this way, you're going that way. This is the last we'll see of each other kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and you know, I know people that have diverted their path for that person and it didn't work out. And so, and then sometimes it can work out beautifully too.
Yeah.
But but there's a big risk, because if you're following someone, you're following their dream. Like, if they're moving somewhere for work, it's never going to be fully for your work, right? So it's always going to be a little bit of a misbalance of not of power, but of, like, you know, of benefit.
Yeah.
And if maybe one goes one
commitment as well.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think it's a different thing when you get into, you know, really long-term relationships and, you know, marriage, et cetera, but it's a risk. And I see this in Amsterdam a lot. I didn't know so many expat couples in Sydney, but in Amsterdam, I worked for booking.com, and there were so many people with partners that had moved over from their country and the partner wasn't working. For example, there was this girl who is a scientist. She works in the cosmetic world. She worked for L'Oreal in Colombia, and or in the South American market. And, you know, very qualified, doctorate, et cetera. But her husband was a developer and he got a job for booking.com. I met her because she was in my Dutch class and she could not get work because she wasn't a fluent Dutch speaker to be able to work in the, you know, the Netherlands counterpart for her industry. And so here's this really qualified person who's followed her husband over. What she's done is she's set up a business of taking care of cats, which is, you know, a really, really interesting business model. Like, she has, because there's so many expats that have cats like me that go away for the weekend. So she's like cornered the market. She basically, like, she goes there and gives them food and plays with them for a half hour. And, you know, it's great. But, like, this isn't what she studied. This isn't what she did with her career. And until, like, she either becomes fluent in Dutch or they move back into Colombia, she's always given that up.
Yeah.
And that this is like one of many, many, many I saw. There was, it was very rare that two people in the couple came over with equal job prospects.
Right. It's another thing to think about, especially for people who might be listening who are going to come with their partner. So they're not coming over as a single person. And this is also another common way for people to move abroad. It's like one person has a job opportunity and the other person is coming because that's their partner. But I feel like we could like talk so much about dating.
I know. And I don't want to put people off that are thinking about coming over with their partner.
No.
But yeah, we could talk forever.
It's good to, like I said, have a different point of view about it because someone else could come in here and say all the different things and, you know, and that's their experience and the process that they went through. But I did want to ask you, and this kind of like ties into it a little bit. And you did mention how you had like plans for your future and that changed anyway. But I'm talking about how you went from wanting to have a family, wanting to have children, and now wanting to have a child-free lifestyle. But where do you see yourself in the future? I know in April, your plan is to be back in Amsterdam. And you did mention in the first part of the podcast that is kind of where you want to make your home. But, you know, 5 years down the line, what do you see for yourself? And where do you see yourself? Do you see yourself 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, being in Amsterdam?
Yeah, good question. So this 2020 has put a lot of things in perspective for me in terms of what my values are and what I need to be happy. And I need good weather. Amsterdam has all the vibrancy of a city, but I need a good climate. I need that stems from just being able to not to be enjoying the outdoors and especially sports and all the healthy lifestyle that goes with that. So in 5 years, I see myself living hopefully in the Canary Islands. I'm planning to buy property here in the next year. I was saving up for a house in Amsterdam, but everything has changed with how I feel. So I'll have, I'm going through the visa still in Amsterdam for another 2 years, and then hopefully I'll be here, especially as work is going more remote. So that's the plan. But I still have a really, really big hole in my heart for Australia. So there's also that part where I'm leaving the door open there, and I'm trying to understand how I can maybe fit that maybe into my life at some point. Yeah, right. That's a really vague answer, I know, but I do see myself retiring in Australia. I mean, that's where my pension is. I have universal health care there, you know, because I'm a citizen. So there's a lot that pulls me to Australia, but while my parents are, you know, still alive and I'm quite close to my brother and sister-in-law as they're raising their family in the US, being in Europe is a really nice middle spot right now where I can jump on a flight 8 hours nonstop and be home. So yeah,
that is
being on the same day, just when you have a call. So for now, in the next 5 years in Europe, but after that, who knows?
Well, it will be exciting to see like how your life transforms in the next 5 years, and then we can look back on this and see, you know, if what you said happened has happened, or if you've changed, because, you know, as we grow, we do change. And, you know, this was one of those years, like you said, where a lot of people had to put things into perspective. And we can't predict the future, so who's to say, you know, something else big won't happen in the future?
Yeah.
Wasn't going to ask. So switching gears a little bit, and I hope this doesn't make this part of the podcast kind of negative. However, I think sometimes when talking about living overseas, we tend to make it sound like it's all good and it's fun and, you know, it's the best thing that you're ever going to do. And in a way, it is fun. It is something like that's going to change your life and be one of those good things that you do in your life. However, sometimes stuff goes wrong and sometimes you do have to struggle. And if you're an expat and you've never had to struggle, you are by far a very lucky individual. So I just wanted to know if you, like, what are some things that you had to go through, like when things went wrong or you've had some struggles or trials and tribulations, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'm trying to base it in the Australian time. Of course, my Netherlands time is more recent in my memory. So things that went wrong. I had always had challenges with apartments. in the beginning, you don't really have a full the full advantage of, or you know, knowing the rental market, or being connected to what locals are paying. So I feel like that's a common thing. I'd land in like some bad apartments that were overpriced, things like that.
In Australia or in Amsterdam?
Oh, both. Yeah, definitely both. I had in Australia, yeah, some really, really, really bad living conditions. Living in shoeboxes with no outdoor space, you know, and housemates that, you know, it kind of made sense why. Oh, I hate to say that, but yeah, they were locals. No one was living with them. Yeah. Exactly. So that was a bit of a drama there. Both in Melbourne, Sydney, and Adelaide, actually. And then in, you know, the job market sense of it. In Australia, I changed career, so I did have to start. Quite the bottom, but I remember when I was doing my doing an unpaid internship, you know, at 20 years old, working for a 21 year old as my boss, and you know, paying to put myself through school, and at nights I was working as a bartender, and I was just exhausted, absolutely exhausted, and just like hemorrhaging cash, you know, to get through this time. But I had my eyes on the prize, which was to get out of hospitality. And yet I was bartending. and there was this one night I was working for the Sydney Fashion Week. I can't even remember where it was located. I can't remember names of places now. But I was working in a busy rush in the VIP bar for like models, and you know, and there was a lot of rudeness from, you know, bloggers and influencers, and you know, that bit of entitlement. And it was already a really tough night, but at some point I bumped my head and started got knocked out and started bleeding profusely, and had to go to the hospital, at which point the pain never went away, and ended up that I also that same night like had an infected tooth, and I had to have a root canal, and it was just like, what is going on with my life? Why is everything like so hard right now? And that all happened in April. Fashion Week. I think that was April 2015. So when I left Sydney, maybe 3 weeks later, I got a job offer in Melbourne. I kind of left with a lot of relief because my last 3 months when I was in school were just really colored in this stressful time of not really. You know, not really enjoying life. I'll put it that way. So I definitely put the hours in, and you know, and so I'm proud of, you know, what I've gone through, that it wasn't always easy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are some hard times.
I'm just trying to like imagine going to the hospital for one thing, and then something different that you didn't know about is now also an issue.
Yeah. And then my health insurance, you know, I didn't have a good policy, so it ended up paying like 10%. It was just like
your private insurance.
And it was at that moment, you know, you realize that you didn't have a good policy, and that, you know, you thought you had dental, or just like one thing after another. So I was I really viewed Melbourne as a fresh start, and and whenever, you know, I was a very staunch supporter of Melbourne whenever the two cities were compared. You know, it's like, oh, you got to date Sydney, but Melbourne's who you marry.
Oh, wow. That's actually a good way to put it. And I think because of the lockout here in Sydney, Melbourne just like took over with the nightlife.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if I could live in Melbourne because of the weather. My brain always thinks, stay where it's warm. And I've heard that Adelaide is quite warm year-round.
Yeah, Adelaide's like a San Diego. It's the same climate.
Really? Okay. Well, it can stay on my list.
Yeah, it's really dry. I mean, I don't mind a 12-degree day if it's guaranteed dry.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know, actually.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I think, you know, those are some of the questions that I was like burning to ask. And Tom didn't leave me with any questions to ask you. So I think this is a good point to kind of wrap up. And you've given, I think this has probably been the episode so far that has had the most like advice kind of just randomly dropped in there. A lot of things that you said, I just felt they were really wise and people could get a lot from that. So thank you for your time, and I know we had to do it in two parts, and with you being in the Canary Islands and us being in Sydney, the timing was always, we had to get it right. But yeah, thanks for doing this episode. Do you have anything that like you want to promote or like anything you want to plug? Definitely, you know, shout out your social media so people know where to find you.
Yeah. What do I want to plug? Yeah, my social media is Laura in Camino, which means Laura's on the road, which is really yeah, an expat sort of name. In Camino is Encamino. It's in Spanish. And I'm the lead social media for Polaroid. So if you're ever interested to see what I do there, you can just follow Polaroid at Polaroid. So that's my work, my passion, actually. I never had a job I've loved so much. So that's me. Thank you so much. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you. And it's cool. I actually might go check out Polaroid and see like some of your work. It sounds very interesting. And you said it's something that you really, really love. And
yeah.
I think we're all kind of trying to get there, you know, do what we love. And then it doesn't really feel like work.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. People keep saying that it's find the job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And I finally get that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a great way to end the podcast. Well, if you liked this episode, please rate us on wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's on Apple or Google or any other platform. Follow us on Instagram at Expat State of Mind. You can also find us on Facebook under the same name. And if you want to send us an email with any questions that you might have, our email address is expatstateofmind@gmail.com. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, my Instagram handle is just The Natural Expat. And yeah, this has been another great episode. Again, thank you, Laura. And Tom sends his regards. And yeah, this is a wrap.
Thanks for listening to Expat State of Mind. And don't forget, if you enjoyed the show, please like, comment, and subscribe. And until next time, look after yourselves.